What's up, everyone, and welcome to episode 284 of Two Amazon Sellers and a Microphone, brought to you by Celozo. And today's going to be a really fun conversation. We're bringing back one of our favorites. Ben's been on the podcast many times in the past because he has an amazing story. He's done a lot. He's the founder of Beast Gear, a brand that he launched and grew and then exited successfully. He's also the founder of Ecom Brokers, where he's helping other brands successfully exit from their e-commerce businesses. And now he's written an amazing book that I feel honored. It launched today, and we've got you on the podcast, Ben, on the day that your book launched. You sent us copies. We've read it. It's an amazing book. It's called Quit Stalling and Build Your Brand. You don't need an MBA to crush it in e-commerce. And that's true. I think Chris and I can attest to that for sure. So Ben Leonard, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be back, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, you mentioned there that I've been on the show a lot of times, but this is like, honestly, I always come off the calls with you guys just feeling like super super hyped up and jazzed, because it's always a great motivating and fun conversation. So thanks for having me back.
It's fun. It's just like if the three of us met at a coffee shop, just talking shop. That's what makes it fun. It's, well, you know, we've been in e-commerce and in different avenues, and you learn a ton just by talking to people who are in the, you know, going through the same grind you're going through, and you get inspiration and encouragement, and I love having these conversations, because you'll learn this one little nugget, one tactic that you haven't done, and you're like, I need to go implement that right now. Mm-hmm. So we've got more than one nugget from you.
Yeah, multiple. Well, how's your launch day, man? How's the launch going?
Oh, well, it's been hilarious and anxious and wonderful. So let me just explain that. So we were just talking before we started recording here about what happened. And this is kind of beautiful in a way, because I can create content about this. And it illustrates many of the points that I try to make in the book. So on Sunday, today is Tuesday. On Sunday lunchtime, I received an email from Amazon, an extremely friendly and polite email that said, hi there, we're immediately banning your account. And you can't open another one, because that's against the rules. So they banned my book selling account before I'd even sold any books. And to explain to the readers why this has been widely seen by many publishers recently. What's happening is a lot of people are creating fake and misleading books using AI and then submitting them to Amazon's Kindle program. And Amazon has had to create tools to automatically fish these out. My book was mistakenly taken down. My whole account was. And to cut a long story short, I managed to get hold of an insider at Amazon who got humans to review it and said, oh yeah, this is cool, and reinstated me finally yesterday. So I was like emailing my entire list and contacting everybody being like, the launch is off, we got to postpone it for at least a week. And then suddenly I wasn't. So it was insane. But also it just illustrates what a wild ride e-commerce is, I think.
Such a wild ride. I mean, this happens in the physical product space all the time. You're seeing it with digital products all the time. Like, it just, no one's ever like bulletproof. Like, it always seems to happen. And in typical Amazon, they react first before they even answer any questions. Like, they just say, yep, he's out of here. Yep. And then you got to figure it out.
Yeah. And that happened to me many, many times with my first brand. Fortunately, nothing terrible has happened with any of my new brands yet, but I know that it will. That's just part of it. And I, at the time when these things happen to you and they suck, I mean, they suck, but I like to, after I've taken a deep breath and taken a step back, I remind myself that this is Amazon tax. This is the price we pay for the tremendous opportunity that Amazon gives us. Mm-hmm. You know? The sheer opportunity that they have created for an unfathomable number of people around the world, it's a small price to pay for the occasional mishap.
It's 100% right. And what they're doing, really, like, what, you know, they obviously have to do this. They can't have humans. I mean, if people are publishing thousands of books a day. They can't have a team big enough to review everything. No. So they have to come up with systems, and they know they're going to cast a net that's going to grab some real authentic books in that. They know that. But imagine if they weren't doing that. I mean, you could be just swamped. You could have copycat books, people republishing your content. I mean, all kinds of things could be happening that would kill your business.
I mean, you something you just said there just kind of made me a light bulb go off in my head about something funny that happened today. So the day I launched my book, I got my first Instagram fake copycat thing. So people contacted me being like, Ben, this isn't you, is it? And I'm like, no. So it's some guy on Instagram. It's like Ben Leonard Pro 042 has copied my exact profile. I presume they're DMing people, giving them some weird offer. I can't contact them because they blocked me. So I have to ask, you know, anyone who contacts me about it to report it. And, you know, it's a funny old world we live in where that kind of stuff happens. But there we go.
Yeah,
it is. If somebody like that would apply that energy into a real product or a real brand, that's a lot of work to do all that.
Yeah, I mean, I admire their hustle. Just don't do it to me, please.
It's trying to help it's crazy. One thing about what you were just talking about there, though, and I think this is applicable to everybody, I mean, people that are starting their, you know, e-commerce journey or entrepreneurship in any way, that happened. So you got this email from Amazon. We're deactivating your account.
Yep.
Most people, that would just finish them right there. They're like, this is, you know, they would just quit or give up or not push through or just say, you know, you got notice from your publisher you were talking about where, hey, this usually takes a few months to resolve. They've seen this in the past. You just went out there and tried to find the solution immediately. And you did. And that's part of what's great about the hustle of e-commerce and entrepreneurship is you didn't give up. You didn't say, this is okay, I'm going to figure out how this can be fixed.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest, you know, I had to release the book. It couldn't wait more than a week. Because I've been telling people for so long, it's coming out on October 10th. And I've got, you know, there's a course coming out to accompany the book in like 4 weeks. And I need that window between the book and the course. And in December, we're having another kid. So I really need to get all this stuff done, right?
And isn't it funny how, like, when your feet get put to the fire, like, you just figure out a way to do it?
You just have to find a way. So, like, they said you can't open another account. And my publisher is like, okay, so technically we shouldn't do this, but we're going to open a new account in your wife's name and hope that we can get the book through the system by, you know, we're going to add some extra pages to the end and call it a notes section so that the book is more than 10% different than your first submission, so that they won't flag it as being just a copy of the same book. Meanwhile, at the same time, I put this post on LinkedIn being like, does anybody know anybody? You know, I need some help here. And, you know, a very kind person DM'd me saying, try this guy. I tried that guy. And I'm pretty sure that's what made the difference, because I'm sure that Amazon gets tens of thousands of appeals like this every day. Why would my one, when they said it was going to be at least 5 business days, why would my one suddenly float to the top? So I think I struck gold with that. And it really proves the cliche that your net worth is your network is true. You know, if I hadn't spent time building a network on LinkedIn and providing people with value, I probably wouldn't have had that kind soul send me that contact in the DM.
Yeah. So now you need to write a book called Quit Stalling and Launch Your Book, and then talk about how you had to launch your book by.
Yeah, maybe. No, I don't know. I'll probably write something else again in the future. But I mean, this one took me 18 months. And after I was probably about 12 months in, I was like, I'm ready to be done now, you know? So I don't think I'm going to write something again I don't want to start writing something again for at least a year.
What was the biggest, like, what's the biggest hurdle when writing a book? Like, for me, I like writing things down, it's a struggle just to get the stuff down on paper, my thoughts down. What was your biggest struggle?
Two things. One was learning how to, so I'm a reasonably good writer because of my academic background in science. I have an undergraduate and a master's degree in ecology, and I'm pretty good at writing scientific stuff. And I'm reasonable at like copy and email marketing and things. But it's taking knowledge and turning that into a chapter that actually people want to keep reading and keep reading and keep reading. So it's learning how to do that. And I got quite good at it, but I had an editor, right, as well, who made my stuff suck less. And then the second hurdle was knowing when to stop. So how do you know when a chapter is done? Or in my case, just getting forced to stop, because there were times, you know, I remember even in the beginning of August, you know, the book was supposed to be totally done and I'm rereading and rereading. And I'm like, hey, can I just change this bit? Can I change this bit? Can I change this bit? And they're like, okay, you can make these final changes and then no more, because the book needs to be finished so that we can actually get this thing published. And that's hard, because you constantly want to improve, because, you know, we all want to put out quality work. So why would you, you're never going to be 100% happy. And there comes a point where you just have to draw a line under it and live with it.
Especially when you have your name on it and you want to make sure you get it sent out. Well, you broke it down into four parts. We got part one of what's stopping you, part two, the brand strategy. Part three is like the business strategy, like a blueprint for your success. And part four is putting it all together. I think something that would be good today to do is kind of like break down these four parts and maybe just give a little bit of nuggets on like, hey, part one is more mental. You know, what do you got to do mentally to get yourself ready? And part two, yada, yada, and so forth. So when we broke this down to parts, part one, two, three, four, what is part one really focusing on? Like, what can readers take away of this particular part of the book?
Yeah, so part one is really about giving yourself permission. So I had my idea for my first brand in 2012, but I didn't do anything about it until 2016. And part of the reason for that was, you know, we grow up in a society where entrepreneurs are other people. You know, you go to school, you go to college or university, you go work for the man. Entrepreneurs are people with business degrees. They're people with loads of capital. They're people who inherit family businesses, or they are they're people who have, you know, they have some incredible idea for something new and they go on Shark Tank and they get loads of money. That's what we're taught. But so I told myself all those excuses, and I just, even though I'd had my idea, I just didn't consider myself to be an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs in my head were like other people. So I did nothing about it. And I felt like I needed, you know, I was almost, because I was growing up in a world where, and I was living in a world where you work for the man and your boss says you can do something, you get permission to do it. It was actually, I just needed to give myself permission. And so that was a critical thing for me, was when I finally gave myself that permission. But I only gave myself that permission when I had a, you know, a huge crisis in my life. I got really sick with a heart problem. And so I'm trying to say to people, don't wait for that to happen to you, because it's probably not going to happen, hopefully. And therefore, you're never going to have some life-changing thing. You need to actually just stop, give yourself permission, and bust some of the kind of myths and excuses that you're telling yourself. And then attached to that is this idea that of this sort of, you know, the level playing field that we have now. You know, we live in a time when you can pretty much learn and do anything you want online for cheap or free, you know, except perhaps, you know, brain surgery and rocket science. But I had no business experience, no product development experience, no marketing experience. But I was able to, you know, what took me from inaction to action was this idea that I really could just Google to find manufacturers. I really could learn how to calculate my profit margins on YouTube. And I really could learn about marketing from podcasts. And that's really powerful. And I think more people need to recognize that we're the luckiest generation to have ever walked the earth. And some people will be listening to this or watching this now saying, really? Like, I turn on the news and there's terrible things happening. We've got climate change. We've got war. We've got pandemics. Politics right now is terrible. Like, people are so divided, nobody can even have a constructive conversation about how to move forward. It's all just like hate. And I'm like, yes, all of that's true, but actually all of that's been true for hundreds of years. It's just that now we hear about it more because of media and the connectedness of the world. But our generation is so lucky. We have access to all of this knowledge and information and tools that enable normal people like us three to go and do something incredible.
You're 100% right on that. And I'm fascinated every day by that. You know, it goes to everything. I mean, like, I can fix like a broken sink like in 5 minutes because of YouTube. But I have no business. I'm like the least handy person I know.
Me too.
And you're, so it's funny, you know, you don't need a MBA to crush it in e-commerce. Your title is so true because I actually have an MBA.
Love it.
I have an MBA it's okay. Cause I tell this to everybody. I'm like, that was a total waste of money. I decided, I mean, years after I got my MBA to launch e-commerce, and in the, whatever it was, 4 months leading up to like, I want to start this to actually having a product for sale on Amazon and listening to podcasts. I learned more about business in those 4 months and had fun doing it than I'll ever learned in my MBA ever. I mean, it's just, it was hands-on. It was real. You started figuring out what these terms really meant. I mean, if I can do it in 4 months and from nothing to having a product for sale, your title is 100% accurate.
Thanks, Dustin. One of the things I hope that I get across in the book is that I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's a get rich quick scheme. I'm not saying you're going to do like $1 million, you know, in your first year or two or something. But what I am saying is it's accessible. And if you give yourself permission, you have a vision and you do the work to understand your customer, develop a quality product to serve them, and market it in a way that's going to resonate with them, you have a great chance of success.
It's true. And there is going to be failures along the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's okay. I mean,
absolutely. I made so many. I made so many mistakes. I've tried to lay them out in the book. You know, it's not easy, right? There are constant challenges and countless failures, but you need to treat challenges as stepping stones and failures as lessons. I remember one, this was looking back, it was kind of hilarious. I tried to save money by registering the brand trademarks myself. And in my defense, I was doing what everybody did. I was in the Facebook groups and the forums and people were saying, oh yeah, you don't need to pay like an attorney to do that. You can just do it yourself. And I was so pleased with myself and so smug when I got my trademark registered with the UK Intellectual Property Office. But like a year later, I was getting some free legal advice from an intellectual property lawyer at the local library. He was doing like this pro bono thing, just like giving back to new startups. And it turned out my trademarks are really weak. Like they were flimsy. Like I'd left the brand wide open. And to be honest, I'd had a lucky escape because the depth and breadth of the trademarks wasn't there because I didn't know what I was doing. And so I coughed up the money to pay to have them redone professionally. And the lesson I learned then was that cheap is expensive and expensive is cheap. In other words, it pays to invest in getting things right the first time. You're going to save yourself a ton of money and a ton of headaches further down the line. And that's just one of many mistakes.
I still struggle with it. I still try to find the cheap way of doing something. And just recently, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to keep digging. This is the rate. This is the rate he's charging. Okay, good. Let's move forward and let's get going.
Yeah. And I appreciate some people listening will be like, but Ben, 2 minutes ago, you said that it's a level playing field and things are available for free or cheap. There's a difference, I think, between learning the principles and the strategies affordably and paying experts to help you in specific, really important parts of your business. I guess you could call them perhaps the little hinges that swing big doors, right? So intellectual property, design, safety, understanding the rules about importing, understanding the rules about certification of your products, all of these really important things you don't scrimp on.
Yeah,
but learning the principles of how to do stuff, you can do cheaply.
Yeah, but when you do things on the cheap, you're like, okay, this video says this, and I read this in a blog that says that, and I need to do this here, but which order do I go in? Do I need to do this first? Mm-hmm. When you just get somebody who's done it, you're like, hey, this is the roadmap. Here's what I did. Here's what you got to do. Just follow this roadmap. Here's the process. and you kind of.
And that's probably why I did the book, because what frustrates me is just the sheer volume of information that's available, but it's confusing. You hit the nail on the head there. It's overwhelming. A lot of it is right, but a lot of it, you have to pick one and go down it. Because if you do this other guy who's right, it's not going to work. Like, you have to choose your approach, right? Mm-hmm. So this is my approach and my take on the principles, the solid business principles applied to e-commerce. And it's a roadmap. And it's, you know, what it's not is it's not a highly technical book about the ins and outs of a particular platform like Amazon or Shopify or Walmart or Etsy or something. It's not going to teach you how to like literally go in and build like a PPC campaign in Amazon or something, because that book will go out of date in 2 months because everything changes. Rather, it is about building brands in e-commerce. And I believe that it'll be helpful to people in 5 years and maybe even, you know, 20, 25 years.
Yeah, you know, and that's a great point that you bring up, because I think I can summarize what you're talking about before. It's the outline and the knowledge of like, you do need a trademark and here's when you need to get it as a process of launching your brand versus how do you actually get the trademark? What you call a trademark attorney.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people, I still talk to people all the time. Do I need a trademark? Do I need this to sell, on Amazon or to build my brand? I mean, conceptualizing all that knowledge and like as a roadmap is super important. But I was going to mention you were talking about it was hard sometimes to stop writing. And because I just for fun, I went right to like the marketing section early on, just because, I mean, that's obviously Chris and I are happy in that section. I was like, you really laid it out perfectly. You gave an overall understanding of what like Amazon PPC is, and you told the importance of it, you know, what you had to do. But I was thinking, man, if I started writing this, you could write a 700-page book on PPC.
You could write a book on Amazon PPC. But the problem is that somebody comes back to it 6 months later and it's like, but it's changed.
Exactly. You know? So you're right. It's just the fundamentals, and you're going to figure it out, and the right people to work with and the right people to help as you go, as long as you're on the right roadmap.
Yeah. So like, let's just take your trademark example there. You know, my hope is that say somebody is reading part of the book where I'm talking about intellectual property, they'll take on board what I'm saying. And then in the very specifics of it, they can go, I've given them enough to know where they're looking, or they could come contact me and I can point them in the right direction of, you know, an attorney or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Part two of the book, you talk about brand strategy. This is where the marketing comes in as well. Find your audience, develop the position of your first product, test and validate the first product, develop your branding, master your marketing. There's a lot in this part, from idea of a product to finding the suppliers to marketing to audience. There's a lot packed in just this particular, you know, section of the book. What are you hitting on here? Like, what are the ways to do this, in an audience? What are some things that you recommend here?
Sure. So I'm a huge fan of building a brand that you're passionate about. And I think we've discussed this a bit before when I've been on. That's not to say that I haven't seen people have success building a brand around something that they're not particularly passionate about. But in my opinion, the optimum way to do this is to build a brand that you really care about. So if you're super jazzed up about Frisbee golf, right? Start a Frisbee golf, but I don't know, right? Making this up now on the fly. You get the idea. So that's where you start, right? And then it's, okay, so that's what I'm interested in. So my people are the people like me that are interested in that. Well, that's your audience, okay? And then it's about understanding your audience, because when you understand the people, then you understand how to sell the products to them. Well, actually, first, you understand how to develop the products that they need to solve the problems that they have. And then you also understand the language of those people, what they want to know and where they want to get it. So where are they hanging out online? What are their challenges? What are their values? What format of information would they like to receive from you? Are they interested in podcasts, blogs, videos, how-to guides, simple social media feed, YouTube channel? all of the above, perhaps. And it's positioning your brand and possibly yourself as the face of that brand as a trusted authority in that space, so that people will know, like, and trust you and want to buy from you. And that's basically it. But obviously we go way, way deep into all of those things, from, you know, understanding what a brand is to understanding what branding is and how to develop your branding and the specifics of the classic marketing strategies that we use. You know, in the book, I talk about Robert Cialdini's principles of persuasion and how we can leverage those in e-commerce. So it's you nailed it there, Chris. There's a lot there, and that's because there's a lot to unpack. And I think that's one of the big mistakes that people make, is they're still stuck in this, 2016 world where you can just slap something on Amazon or now these days Walmart, and it'll sell. And for some people that kind of still sort of works, but you're not building anything sustainable that you're going to be able to sell. You're not going to be able to exit that. And there's also, what's the satisfaction? What's the pride in just hawking stuff on the internet? When somebody asks you what you do, you know?
Yeah.
You want to be able to puff up your chest and say, well, actually, I do this. And this is cool. I believe in it and I love it.
And this part feels like the foundation to me, anyway. This feels like this is what you're building your product around. This is where you got your audience, you got your branding, you're picking your color schemes, you're figuring out your audience. Like, this feels like the foundation.
I think it is. And some people who aren't into this, who've built businesses, and I'm going to be careful not to say brand here because they haven't built brands. They've built businesses that are not really represented by a legit brand, that have done well and have generated decent revenue and profit for them. And they'll look at this and they'll scoff and they'll say, this is all fluff. But times, they are a-changing. And the world goes in cycles. And brand was so, so important when we saw these fantastic brand pioneers of the 80s, right? Apple, Patagonia, right? All these guys. And then we had the dot-com era and the Amazon.com era of hawk stuff online and brand doesn't matter anymore. And now we're coming out the other side and brand matters again, because people care about
brand. People buy from people.
And people buy from people. I'll compromise with you on that. They buy from brands, but they connect with people.
Pete, there you go.
So like I love a brand. I play the drums. I love a brand of drums called Sonor. I love the brand because of the products that they produce, which are high quality, and because of the way that they connect with me with the content that they produce, etc. But I also love them because of the people that I connect with, which is the professional drummers who use the products. And I watch the videos and I listen to the music and I connect with them. And that's the gateway that got me to love that brand. And if people can just give themselves permission to act like a real brand, rather than just saying, well, yeah, but I'm just Ben on a laptop in my spare room. I can't act like Nike. Well, actually you can. The only difference between you and Nike is scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And when we do that and actually treat our business with the respect it deserves and treat it like a real brand, then suddenly our audience starts treating us with respect and like a real brand, and they want to buy from us.
Next time we have you on, I'm going to need a drum intro. I'm a sucker. Anytime I see live music, the drummer is like, I'm fascinated by it. Just love like a good like drummer. I don't know. I can never play it, but I would love to learn it.
Recently, I've been so bad for procrastination. That's one of my things is procrastination. Like I can really go down rabbit holes and I'm not working. It's really bad. I talk about that. There's bonuses to go with the book. And there's one of the bonuses where I talk a bit about that. And recently I've been procrastinating so badly because there's this fantastic YouTube channel called Drumeo. And they have this feature where they get a drummer from like one genre and they play them a song they may never have heard before. And they have to like learn it. But what's great about it is that what they play them, they've removed the drum track. So just the other day, I was watching one and what's his name from the Chili Peppers?
Oh gosh.
How can I forget his name? I
love Chad Smith.
Chad Smith.
Yeah, Chad from Chili Peppers is listening to a song by 30 Seconds to Mars, and he hasn't heard it, and he nails it in like one take. It's so good. Gosh. And everyone who's listening to this who isn't into that is going to be like, Ben, get back to e-commerce. So I'll shut up.
It's all right.
Part three.
I like part three because it's kind of scary. It's about finding capital and like getting the money and putting your neck on the line here. I did the old take out two credit cards, put all the inventory on a credit card, hope to have, the 0% for 21 months, whatever, and then hope to pay it off. The credit cards are scary, but what's part three talk about?
Yeah, you're going to need some capital. The days of starting with $500 are long gone. Minimum 10 grand, minimum. And really, a decent rule of thumb is at least suppose, and this is for somebody starting, right? Just to make sure I drive this point home, there's value in this book for somebody who's doing $12 million, and there's value in this book for somebody who's just starting, I promise. But if you are just starting, a good rule of thumb is if you know what your target monthly revenue for your first product is, you're going to need at least 120% of that as your startup capital. So if you're going to be doing like 10 grand a month once that product is launched and ticking over, you're going to need at least 12 grand a month to start, I think. Some people say you need less and some people say you need more. And everybody's different and everybody will end up needing more or less. But that's a decent rule of thumb. So where are you going to get it? Well, I don't know what it's like over there, but over here in the UK, when they show betting adverts on sports, there's always like a little disclaimer like, please gamble responsibly. Do not gamble more than you can afford to risk. It's the same in business. So make sure you can afford what you're putting into it, and that if it be ready for it to fail, and either be accepting of it or don't do it, and be ready that if it does fail, either you're done and it was your first and last rodeo, or can you afford to go again, which is really why it's so important that you do the work that I lay out in the book to minimize your risk of it not going well. The other part of it is, well, where else are you going to get it? Well, frankly, a great source of capital is your friends and family. However, you need to ask your friends and family responsibly. Don't ask people who you know can't afford it, but would gladly give you it because they're good people and they love you and they care about you and they want you to succeed. You gotta do the right thing. There are plenty of other sources of capital. Loans. Loans can work really well, provided they're a strategic loan. And that, so this one might not be necessarily for your startup capital, but potentially like you've got things taken over, but you need to grow. I've had clients where they've been selling, they've been buying a product for $5, selling it for $20. That's a decent return on investment there. And they've been able to get a loan at an interest rate of, 4% or whatever it might be. And that makes complete sense because that's a strategic loan, which is giving them the opportunity to grow their business. Fantastic. There's the SBA, Small Business Administration in the US, where you can get capital from. For some people, crowdfunding is a good option. I talk about that a little bit in the book. Crowdfunding is a whole art in and of itself. And if you're going to do it, you got to nail your campaign. I'm working on a campaign for a new brand of mine that's going to launch next year. I recommend with I'm not an expert in crowdfunding, so I'm working with an expert agency who are helping me to get it right. I think that's a good option. And then actually, you'd be surprised what you can get in terms of free money, grants. So grants, your local government, local councils, sometimes charities, or even there are privately backed grants available. So where I live in a small corner of Northeast Scotland, where the local government, the council, Aberdeenshire Council, pretty much anyone who starts a business gets £1,000. So £1,000. Well, if you need 10 grand to start, that's 10%. It's not bad. Suppose you're starting a business in a particular, space. There could be organizations within that space that want to back the next best thing. Like, I don't know, let's just make up an example. You're starting a brand of environmentally friendly scuba diving accessories. okay, well, maybe charities like Surfers Against Sewage will give you a grant. Don't know. You'll have to go and do the work yourself. But there are opportunities there. And it comes kind of back to what you were saying before, Dustin, is like, you just don't stop and you just keep going. You find a way to make it happen.
Yeah, sometimes I'm more risk tolerant as a individual in a lot of ways. And fortunately, you know, my wife and my family are supportive of all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, because you know, the risk, it has its downsides, obviously. But I mean, at some point, and I was, you know, I had to learn a lot about lending and how you can get credit and the different types that you can get. But that, I mean, a lot of cases for e-commerce brands, I mean, there is an issue, and it's going to be scaling quickly, and then your next order is going to have to be way bigger than your revenue that you've received.
Yep.
Already from your initial small. I mean, if you're smart and you order a small amount to test and validate your product, which you talk about in your book, but you're finding out that you can sell, you know, 30, 40 units a day, your next order can't be 500 units. And you're not going to have enough revenue now to get. But I think at this point, that's where utilizing debt and like to help grow your company is a smart business decision. All businesses do.
100%. 100%. At that point, it's less risky because you know it works.
Right.
Like, exactly. You know this is working. All you need to do is have more inventory. So the risk is lower because you have the evidence that this is a smart thing to do. But it also, you know, what you're touching on there also plays into the fact that, and this is in the book, you've got to validate your products and make sure that there's a high enough ROI on them in so that you're not going to be in a position where, oh, damn it, I need to order more. On paper, this is profitable, but all my money is tied up in this inventory that hasn't sold yet. What am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part four talks about putting it all together. Pre-launch, launch, set up for growth, marketing for growth. And then this is where you really make most of your money is the exit, is when you plan your exit. You know, I still struggle with this one too. It's like, you know, I don't know, do you want to exit or do you want to hold on to this and continue just to grow it and see it out? I don't know. This is up for debate still, but what's going on here in the part four? You're putting it all together. You're launching, you're pre-launching, all that stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, somebody, and again, this is for might be this way of thinking about it might be more applicable to somebody who's just starting, but they've developed their brand. They've developed and validated their first product. They're ready to go. So now they need to put energy into this spring. I think the comparison I make in the book actually is like when you were a kid and you used to wind up the propeller on a toy airplane and it had like a rubber band on it. You're putting all this stored potential energy into your business, and then you're going to go. And so we talk about the importance of actually planning your launch so that on the day you launch, it's not crickets and everything, you know, explodes, which hopefully is what's happened today with my book, if I've got it right. And then we have the actual launch, and not just the launch section isn't just about like the actual launch. It's about the launch. And then how are you going to get from, you know, a launch is chaotic. You're riding by the seat of your pants. You're asking everybody to buy it. You're trying desperately to get tons of reviews. You're hoping that your website doesn't break, and you're trying to provide fantastic customer service and make sure your social media is on point. It's mad. But then there comes a point where we've got to orbit, and suddenly things are ticking over. The wheels aren't going to fall off if we stop, and we can take a step back, take a deep breath, and think about what we do next. And what we do next is we grow. But to grow, we need to go from that chaotic kind of flying by the seat of our pants launch mode into a much more methodical, thought out, and business-like approach, which is why now in the book I'm talking about how to set up your business properly in terms of your organizational structure, your SOPs and your manuals, hiring, and basically building a slick machine that's just a money printing machine. You put money in, you develop products, and you get more money out, basically. And then it's turning it into, you know, you hit the nail on the head there, Chris, with the exit. isn't it turning it into an attractive opportunity that somebody else is going to want to acquire? So that if you started, you know, 3 to 5 years later, you're in a position where you can sell that business for potentially life-changing money, or if you wish, keep growing it.
Mm-hmm. Or well, start over, sell it and flip it and do another one and just yep. keep building brands.
Yeah, it's great fun.
Yeah, I mean, that I think for a lot of the people that started e-commerce, specifically Amazon e-commerce at the time that Chris and I did, exiting, selling your business was not on anybody's radar. Mm. It was all, how can we sell more products? How can we sell
churn
more?
Churn and burn.
And just working through it. And, you know, you were probably one of the first people that we talked to that was really adamant about building the brand and adamant about, from the beginning, setting everything up so that it would be an attractive business to exit. Because that's the day you're going to make the most money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I didn't do that from the start because right. you, and I'm open about it in the book, but you got to remember that I had no business experience. I started my business literally because I was, I couldn't work. I couldn't train. My mental health was terrible. I needed something to do. So I started it as a hobby. My plan was to sell the products into gyms. Didn't go so well. Ended up realizing I could sell online. That went a lot better. It was only when I was, I don't know, a year and a half into the business, that I realized where this was going and what value I could be sitting on if I kept doing this. And then that's when I got my stuff together more in terms of organization and making sure that if I presented my business in a box to somebody, they could open the box, look inside, and it would be neat and tidy and it would make sense and they could run with it. So I was able to kind of make that change. But my life would have been a heck of a lot easier if I'd started it in the right way in the first place. And you hit the nail on the head there, Dustin. You know, the most money you're ever going to make from your business is the day that you sell it. So why would you not dedicate some time every day to making sure that your business is in a state that's going to go really well and you're going to make the money that you deserve?
Absolutely.
I tell people all the time, like, if you're going to get into this, like, this is a long play. This is not like, hey, you're going to throw a product on 40 to 45 days later, it's going to be a $1 million brand. You're going to have to actually put some effort and time into this. This is not like a get rich scheme type of deal. This is a real business. You're building something real. So you yep. got to be able to put the effort into it.
100%. Yeah.
And, you know, I just want to tell people why they should be going out and getting this book. Because Chris and I have read it. It's amazing. And it brought me back just the way that you outlined the book. And we've been in the trenches. These are the steps that you're going to want to take, and knowing them up front, if you're looking to launch an e-commerce business and build a brand of any kind, following these steps and having this roadmap is going to make a huge difference. And I remember a long time ago, I read Tim Ferriss's book, 4-Hour Workweek. To me, you know, the way he laid that out was a lot, was you know, talking about mindset, what you're trying to do, but also it was overviews of different types of businesses that you could do, that you could run, where you would have more freedom in your life. And it didn't like dive into every single detail, but I mean, that really got me started on my journey. I was like, I've got a roadmap for what this could look like. This book, you know, for building a brand, it's inspiring, it's encouraging, and it gives people permission to go chase after their dreams, and, you know, and lays out the entire roadmap. So I think everybody should 100% go get it. And last thing I want to say is, because I saw this quote the other day, and I thought it was amazing. Maybe it's a super popular quote, I don't know, maybe everyone knows it, but, and I can't even give credit to who said it. But the quote was, there's only two people in your life that you need to impress, and that's your 8-year-old self and your 80-year-old self. Would they be proud of you? If those two people, if your 8-year-old self and your 80-year-old self would be proud of you, you're doing the right thing. And I think that's something that everyone is a great, brilliant. I was like, that's a brilliant quote.
I'm going to Google that and find out where that's from.
I don't know who, I want to find out who, I got to give the right credit, but that's like to giving yourself permission, I think. That's like,
yeah,
that's, you know, if you've been dreaming about something like this for your whole life, you know, and if you, do you want to be 80 and regretting never doing anything, especially now, like you so, you well, you outlined it so well, $10,000 to get started. Like that's, you could really commit to that. That's,
yeah. Know. And you know what? I mean, a lot of people listening to this won't be getting started because they're listening to this podcast because they're already in e-commerce.
Right.
And, but it, the same thing applies. If you, perhaps you have an e-commerce business, but you don't have like a legit brand, it's in there. Or perhaps you need to, you're listening to this and you're like, when we're talking about cash flow, you're like, yeah, that's me. I'm struggling with cash flow. You know, we deal with that. Or perhaps you want to launch new products and get it right this time. It hasn't gone so well in the past. It's in there. I've tried to kind of, one of the things I talk about in the book is that everybody is not your customer and you're not marketing to everybody. The riches are in the niches. And I'm not trying to do that either. I'm not saying that literally every business person in the world is gonna love this book. But what I am saying is that if you're in e-commerce and you want to approach things the right way, or even you're just curious to see what the fuss is all about and what my take is, then I think you're gonna find this this useful. And it's my hope that it's gonna, everybody's gonna get, who everybody who gets a paper copy at least and not a Kindle copy, your book is gonna get trashed. Because you're going to take it off the shelf regularly to flick through it and just come back to the sound business principles. There's no short-term hacks in the book. So anyone who wants hacks, like, sorry, it's not in there.
Well, we got a link in the description. I put a link in the description earlier. I showed it on the screen earlier. You can just go to Amazon, type in Ben's name, and it pops up. That's exactly what I did. I typed in Ben really? Leonard. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I typed in Ben Leonard, and it was there. So. That works too. So the book is there. Go get it. I think it was like 99 cents. Super, super cheap.
That's yeah. The Kindle version for this week. So if you're listening to this, today's the 10th of October, Tuesday, this week, the Kindle version is 99 cents or 99 pence or 99 euros. It depends where you are. The paperback and there's a hardback version as well, though. That's not, that'll be out in a couple of days. But yeah, the Kindle version is 99 cents and the paperback and the hardback versions are obviously a bit more.
Good deal.
Well, Ben, thanks so much for joining us, man. It's been a blast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Everyone go buy that book right now. It's amazing. But all right. Well, that's it for today, everyone. We'll see you on the next episode. Have a good one.
Cheers.